Welcome to Earth Matters, coming to you live today here on Gila Members Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM. This is Allison Civic, Executive Director of Gila Resources Information Project, and I'm your host for today's program. 2014 is an important year for the Gila River. Under the Arizona Water Settlements Act, the AWSA, New Mexico must notify the Secretary of the Interior by December 31st whether it intends to move forward with a Gila River diversion. The New Mexico Interstate Stream Commission and Federal Bureau of Reclamation have released preliminary information for a range of diversion, conveyance, and storage alternatives that would divert, store, and pump water over the Continental Divide for municipal and agricultural use. The project is estimated to cost $400 million to $600 million and would irreparably harm the last wild river in the state. These analyses do not demonstrate who will use the water and how much it will cost water users. Is this another example of a speculative and harmful mega water project that will burden the taxpayer with high costs for little gain? Joining me today here in the studio to talk about the Interstate Stream Commission's proposal is Norm Gaum, one of the foremost critics of the Gila River Diversion Project. Norm has had a distinguished career spanning more than 40 years. He's a retired licensed professional water engineer with a BS in electrical engineering and an MS in civil engineering from New Mexico State University. He's a former New Mexico Interstate Stream Commission director serving from 1997 to 2002. He's been a consulting engineer and expert, and from 2004 to 2012, Norm served as a key member of the management and engineering team that implemented Santa Fe's successful diversion from the Rio Grande for drinking water. Norm testified during the 2014 legislative session and recently to the Interstate Stream Commission about the fatal flaws in the Gila River diversion proposals. Good morning, Norm.
Good morning, Allison.
So let's set the stage. Norm, the Arizona Water Settlements Act entitles New Mexico to consumptively use 14,000 acre-feet per year on average, and this is a junior water right. How does this work, this junior water right?
Well, the water right was provided to New Mexico by a federal law that was passed in 1968. You know, and if you think about the development of New Mexico and its rivers, all of the water in all of the rivers in the state was effectively being used by the turn of the last century. The story about how New Mexico got this junior water right, I think it's important to understand that briefly before I describe what it is. At the time, in the 1960s, New Mexico had a very powerful senior senator, Clinton P. Anderson. Arizona was desperate to obtain federal authorization of the Central Arizona Project, that huge diversion project that pumps water from the Colorado River on the California border all the way up to Phoenix and Tucson. They were desperate to get that approved. The legislation to authorize that project had to go through Senator Clinton P. Anderson's committee. And in some political horse trading, he got agreement from the Arizona legislative delegation for New Mexico to obtain a 1968 water right for 18,000 acre-feet of water. And we are dealing now, 45 years later, with the fourth attempt to develop that junior water right.
So when you say junior, junior means we're last in line to the senior water rights holders down in Arizona. Is that right? What does a junior water right mean?
Well, you're exactly right, Allison. There's the saying, first in time, first in right. Those are the senior water rights. And the opposite side of that is last in time, you have the worst right. You take what's left over after all the seniors are satisfied. So New Mexico's water right is very junior. It is so junior that every drop of the use of that water in New Mexico requires replacement with an equal amount of water Well, how does that benefit New Mexico? Well, that's very arguable, but the way it works is that before New Mexico can divert any water from the Gila River, it has to have already paid money to the Secretary of the Interior to pay for the cost of pumping water from the Colorado River up to the Gila River. That's a big expense.
So the Gila River down in Phoenix. So that's the exchange, right? They have to that's the exchange agreement. So that really came about way back when in the 60s was the only way New Mexico could get this water was through exchange. Is that correct?
That's correct. That was a condition of the original junior water right. And that condition has grown more stringent as time has passed, and we've gone through successive failures to develop this water. The junior water right has actually shrunk. It's no longer 18,000 acre feet. It's 14,000 acre feet. And it's the very nature of a junior water right on a river that the wet water supply is going to be less than the amount of the junior water right. That is just the way it works.
Right. So how does New Mexico propose to use its junior water right? How's it going to develop the right under the AWSA? What are some of the elements of this diversion project that New Mexico is proposing?
Well, the proposal that the FLAWD process has put forward involves building a surface water diversion in the Gila River Canyon, above the Cliff Gila Valley. The idea was to build the diversion far enough up in the canyon that water could flow by gravity into a reservoir constructed in an arroyo on the side of the Cliff Gila Valley that would provide stored water for irrigators who have farms in the Cliff Gila Valley. So water's diverted out of the river. It flows by the mechanisms that have been proposed to take the water to storage, I think, are all infeasible. But we can talk a little bit about that as we go on today. So the water's conveyed to the storage, and then it gets stored in these reservoirs constructed in sandy and gravel arroyos.
So you've talked a lot about fatal flaws of the diversion project. So what are some of the fatal flaws that you've uncovered in your research and of the Interstate Stream Commission's engineering and cost analysis?
Well, one of the fatal flaws is sediment. At flood flows, which is one of the times that this junior water right can be diverted. New Mexico is legally allowed to divert when the river's at flood stage. Well, at flood stage, there's tremendous amounts of sediment in the river, huge amounts. The Interstate Stream Commission hired an engineering consultant named Bohannon Houston to put forward some alternatives for diversion and conveyance and storage of water. And this consultant released, the Interstate Stream Commission put it up on their website, released their report in January of this year. And they didn't deal with the sediment that's in the water. Well, you have to imagine this conveyance system, so let me try to paint a little word picture of it. There's a diversion dam in a canyon. The diversion dam would take the water out of the river where it would flow into a tunnel that they would bore through a mountain. Would come out near Mugione Creek in the Gila River, and then it would go into a 108-inch diameter buried pipeline system that would go all the way past the 180 Highway Bridge and would take water into these arroyo bottom reservoirs on both sides of the canyon. Well, as any plumber knows, whenever you have solids in water, it's not the water that's the problem, it's the solids. And in the case of river water, it's the sediment. So this closed pipeline and tunnel system is higher at the diversion, and on both ends where the water flows up into reservoirs, it's lowest in the bottom. The sediment is all going to settle out and plug the pipelines. That's all there is to it. Now, that's a fatal flaw. And when I talk about fatal flaws, I mean that a flaw that is so serious that it can't be fixed. This particular concept for diversion and conveyance of water to these storage reservoirs is fatally flawed. They can't fix it. There are other aspects of other alternatives, such as extreme cost, that make those alternatives infeasible. Nobody would be willing to pay those costs, but they're not necessarily a fatal flaw.
Right. So one other huge issue to me that you've revealed more recently is that the yield of a Gila River diversion project is questionable. So the full 14,000 acre feet per year under the AWSA might not be there for a project, could be considerably less. Can you explain this?
Well, it's not might not be there, Allison. It's will not be there. The maybe the clearest example of that is to look at the water that would have been legally available for diversion over the five-year period from 1999 to 2003. That was a dry period. Those dry periods will probably get worse in the future. But if the project had been operating back then, the yield of the project in those years would have been effectively nothing, no water. Now, if you look at the project on average, there would be some yield. It would be incredibly expensive water. But, you know, the Interstate Stream Commission, or I should say the flawed process, has not determined what the yield would be. If they know what the yield is, they're not telling.
So yield is influenced by climate, evaporative losses, seepage losses. What are some of the things that are really influencing the yield being something less than the 14,000 acre feet per year?
Well, on average, New Mexico is limited to 14,000 acre feet per year. So the first constraint on yield is that water right. Then the next next constraint is the wet water that's legally available for diversion. How much water can New Mexico legally take from the river? And then you have losses in the reservoirs, which include both evaporation from the reservoir surface. The process's engineer said that would be 6,000 acre feet per year. So right there, if you have 14,000 acre feet of legally available water, which you don't, take evaporation off of, you're only left with 8. Then in projects of this nature, particularly where there are endangered and threatened species that live in the river or in the riparian areas adjacent to the river, there will be a federal requirement for mitigation, which will require water. 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 acre feet per year of mitigation water, maybe more. You know, that hasn't been determined. And what's left over is the net yield that's available for people.
Right. So wow. So and seepage losses, do we know magnitude of seepage losses?
Well, seepage losses, I think, are going to be a big problem. The preliminary engineering report included, buried in an appendix prepared by a geotechnical engineer, a strong professional warning that seepage could be more important than evaporation.
Okay, so considerably less than the 14,000 acre feet per year of water would be the yield of a Gila River diversion project. We'll be right back after this short break and continue our discussion with Norm Gomm. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. This is Allison Civic, your host for today's program. We're here with Norm Gomm, former Interstate Stream Commission director from 1997 to 2002, and one of the foremost critics of diverting the Gila River under the Arizona Water Settlements Act. New Mexico will decide how to proceed under the AWSA later this year. And we've been talking about fatal flaws, and Norm's spent a lot of time reviewing the information that the Interstate Stream Commission's contractor, Bohannon Houston, has put out, as well as a lot of other reports, and has come up with a list of fatal flaws of the Gila River diversion project. And we've talked about the yield of the project being significantly less than the 14,000 acre feet of water that we've all assumed is going to be available. But really, probably less than half. We've also talked about sedimentation. What about evaporation and seepage losses, Norm? The water is going to be stored in you mentioned shallow arroyos. A lot of water can be lost through seepage and evaporation, right? How does that work?
Well, any time you store water in a reservoir, there's a large surface area. The evaporation rates in this area are probably currently between 5 and 6 feet a year. So if you were to put out a water bowl for your dog and keep it full, measure how much you put in it over the course of the year, you would add 5 or 6 feet of water to that bowl. Well, in a reservoir, there's a very large surface area. That water disappears. By the way, every bit of that water has to be paid for by exchange. That means New Mexicans who are the beneficiaries of this project have to pay the federal government to pump water from the Colorado River on the California border up to the Gila River area. So there's no free lunch there. The evaporation has to be paid for. Perhaps of even greater concern is the seepage losses from the reservoir. The preliminary engineering report contains, buried in an appendix, a very clear warning from a geotechnical engineer who signed and stamped with his engineering seal this report and said, basically, that evaporation is likely to be, seepage is likely to be of greater concern than evaporation. Well, evaporation is a huge concern. If seepage is even greater, there won't be any water left. The reservoir sites have not been evaluated, but I've looked at them, and I think there's potential for huge seepage losses.
And so evaporation at full storage volume could be as much as, what, 6,000 acre-feet a year?
Bohannon Houston, in their draft preliminary engineering report, said that evaporation would be about 6,100 acre-feet per year if the reservoirs were full. They used 5 feet a year, 5 feet of evaporation a year as their rate, which comes from a 1972 study. There's much more recent information, and the temperatures are going to get warmer in the future. I mean, we need a clear-eyed look at that as well.
And seepage, did the geotech analysis give you a sense of how much volume could be lost to seepage, or just...
No, at this point, the seepage warning has been officially raised by the geotechnical engineer. It's not otherwise been recognized by anybody that I can see, and certainly nobody has indicated that it needs to be looked at in detail and a decision made as to whether or not the losses are so high that the project's even feasible. So is that a fatal flaw? Well, no, but it's crucial information that this flawed process has not yet produced.
Right, right. So these fatal flaws have cost implications, and the ISE's revised cost estimates range somewhere between $400 million and $600 million for the various alternatives. I'm just wondering, what does this mean in terms of these fatal flaws? Does this raise the cost? Are they technical issues that can be addressed or not? And what does that mean for cost? What are we talking about?
Well, I think I should, before I answer that question, maybe talk a little bit about terminology.
Okay.
When I say there's a fatal flaw, what I mean is no matter what they did, they couldn't fix it. So the preliminary engineering concept of a tunnel and a buried pipeline that's higher on both ends and settles all the sediment out, that's a fatal flaw. They can't fix that concept. Nothing they could do could fix that concept. And it's another constraint is there's just not much difference in elevation between the diversion point and the reservoir. And they need to get the water by gravity flow. So under those constraints, that concept is fatally flawed. Is it a fatal flaw that people can't afford the project? It costs so much that it can't be afforded? Well, I guess if you had a sugar daddy or the federal government or somebody to pay the bill, then that wouldn't necessarily be a fatal flaw. It's just infeasible. It costs so much. There are other aspects of the project that aren't strictly fatal flaws, but in the end, I think they alone will kill it because it's infeasible. And cost is certainly one of those things. The Bohannon-Houston initial cost estimate that was contained in their January report this year was $350 million with a 20% contingency. The cost estimate was based on an obviously very incomplete estimate. The 20% contingency is wildly inappropriate for that level of detail. It should be 100% at that level of detail. It's interesting that in the 3 months since that estimate came out, they've already raised the cost to $438 million and put a 25% contingency on it. Maybe $438 million with a 50% contingency would get us into the ballpark. But regardless, this is the most expensive water anywhere in the West, period.
Right, especially if the yield is less than 7,000 acre feet a year. Now, what does that do, Norm, on a per unit basis, on a cost per acre foot? If you're spending $600 million for a diversion project, but you're only getting out of that 7,000 acre feet a year versus the 14,000, doesn't that raise the per unit cost?
Well, who's going to pay for the water, Allison, I think is the key question. If we assume that the people who get their water from Deming and Silver City and pay water bills today would have to pay for this project, their water rates would go up 10 or 20 fold.
So what are we talking about? I believe you've done some calculations in terms of per unit cost. So presumably this is going to raise water rates. This is what you just said. What are we looking at for cost per, 1,000 gallons, which I think is typically used by local municipalities for their water rate?
Okay. Well, this will be a little bit of a detailed explanation, but bear with me, please. Investment banker has furnished their estimate of what they call the cost of service to the Gila San Francisco Water Commission. We have a copy of that cost of service, and I did some calculations based on it. It's based on an annual cost in the first year of operation of $20 million. So this would include the delivery costs, which would be the energy and exchange costs, I presume. There's no explanation that I have seen. It includes operations and maintenance and includes debt service on revenue bonds that would be sold to pay for the construction of the project. Now, the construction cost that they've used is quite low, and it doesn't have a big contingency in it. So these are the least impacts that one could possibly imagine. If the yield of the project with these costs were half of the 14,000 acre feet, which is the best it could be in my view, then the water would cost. Now, remember, this is not treated drinking water. This is raw river water delivered to Silver City and to Deming. It would be $8 a 1,000 gallons. Now, Silver City provides safe drinking water to its customers delivered to their houses for $4.20. So that would be basically a 200% increase. Deming provides drinking water currently for $2.28 a 1,000 gallons. So for Deming, it would be a 350% increase. Well, if the yield were lower, let's say 2,000 acre feet, and it's going to be lower than that at times, then you're looking at a tenfold rate increase for Deming and a sixfold rate increase for Silver City for no benefit. they don't get any drinking water. All they get is a raw water supply that's there only part of the time. Who would take those kinds of risks for that huge cost for essentially no benefit?
That's right. So so one could expect if that water obviously the water needs to be treated. So to build the infrastructure to treat that raw Gila River water and get it into the system, you're talking even more cost to get that water delivered, essentially. So is that correct?
That's exactly correct. I mean, and to give people an idea of the magnitude of the costs involved, the Santa Fe River diversion from the Rio Grande, which produces drinking water from river water, the final cost of that project was $230 million. By the way, that project started out with a cost estimate of $99 million. So that shows you how the cost of these projects inevitably increase dramatically over time.
And how much water is that supplying, if you remember, and to how many people, roughly?
Well, it provides water to the city of Santa Fe and Santa Fe County, and it's about 6,000 acre feet a year.
Okay.
So it's in the ballpark of the median yield, if you would, of the project we're talking about here. But most of the cost of that project, I mean, a great deal of the cost of that project, was the drinking water treatment plant.
Mm-hmm. Which we don't have factored into this analysis right now, into this Gila River diversion analysis. It's just delivery of the raw water, none of the delivery and treatment of actual drinking water.
That's correct.
What about, before we take a break, Norm, what about for agricultural users? There has been talk that some of this water could be used for irrigation. What is this water affordable to farmers?
Well, using these same numbers from the investment banker, if the project yielded the most it could possibly yield, I mean, and I don't think it can yield this much, but if it yielded 10,000 acre feet a year, that water would cost farmers, if they were paying the cost, $2,000 an acre foot. $2,000 an acre foot. Well, if you're in agriculture to grow a crop, you need the cost of producing that crop to be less than the value of the crop. And with $2,000 an acre foot water, there is no way.
Okay. So we'll be right back with Earth Matters after this short break. Stay with us as we continue our discussion with Norm Gaum about the Gila River diversion fatal flaws here on Gila Members Community Radio 89.1 FM. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. This is Allison Civic of Gila Resources Information Project, and I'm your host for today's program. I'm joined here in the studio by Norm Gaum, former New Mexico Interstate Stream Commission Director from 1997 to 2002, and we're talking about the Gila River Diversion Project and its fatal flaws. So before we jump into alternatives, Norm, just to finish up our discussion from the previous segment, who benefits from a Gila River diversion project? Who's really driving this? Who's benefiting if we move forward with the diversion?
You know, I'm not sure about that, Allison. I can't see that you could, if you're fair, describe the citizens of Grant County and Luna County who'd be saddled with huge bills. I can't see that as being a benefit. I mean, they already have good water supplies. It's not like they're desperate. And we'll talk about it under alternatives, but they have other much cheaper, much more effective options. So who would benefit? Well, I suppose the bureaucracies that continue to make work pursuing their flawed process, that really doesn't seem like a benefit, but perhaps they see it that way. Certainly the investment bankers who sell the revenue bonds. Certainly the construction companies who would make lots of profit out of building the project. Maybe speculators. but I see very little benefit for the residents of Southwest New Mexico.
One of the things that struck me in looking at that cost of service analysis that was done by G.K. Baum for the Gila San Francisco Water Commission is the fact that in year one, they're projecting a profit. So every year of the project, there is a profit being made from selling water. And, you know, that to me is a little, it's sort of a hidden tax in a way, no? That you're using water rates to fund other projects, I don't know, without really being upfront about the fact that you're selling water to make a profit. And gross receipts tax as well, I think, is something else that ends up coming out of this project. So I don't know. Do you have a sense of, is that typical for water utilities, water authorities, especially that are city and county run to be profit-making entities?
Allison, that's an excellent question. And that particular aspect of the investment banker's proposal is just not credible to me. I don't think that the public entities, if they were to agree to this, would raise their rates high enough to both pay for the project and make a profit. But they'd have to raise their rates enough to fund the whole process of marketing the revenue bonds. And the investment banker's take on that is measured in the tens of millions of dollars. So, yes, there are some vested interests that would benefit.
Okay. So one of the things I think that people don't realize is the fact that New Mexico has a choice under the Arizona Water Settlements Act. We don't have to build a diversion project. There's $66 million in non-reimbursable funding that, with inflation, if you raise that using the construction cost index, we're talking something about $90 million. So, you know, what are the alternatives, Norm? You know, if we move forward with a diversion project, what are we giving up?
Well, you're giving up real practical solutions that would provide a long-term sustainable water supply based on grant for Grant County residents. You're basically wasting all of the money that Senator Domenici got for New Mexico back when the terms of the Arizona Water Settlement Act were negotiated. I was director of the commission during those times. The win that New Mexico got was the $66 million that could be spent on any project that meets a water supply need in Hidalgo, Grant, Catron, and Luna counties, Southwest New Mexico. That's what Senator Domenici wanted. So the win was this money that could be spent for practical projects that would meet real needs. Nobody thought that the construction of a diversion was on the table. And I've talked to many people, including the people at the Bureau of Reclamation at the time. They didn't think that. I didn't think that. The Arizonans didn't think that. I'm not sure who did, actually. But let's talk about what could be done with the project. There are a range of alternatives that have been proposed. I think that they are receiving short shrift in the evaluation that they're getting from this flawed process, because the flawed process is clearly driving toward a diversion. But as an example, there is a proposal that was made by the Grant County Water Commission. There are lots of organizations here, but the Grant County Water Commission made a proposal that would provide sustainable groundwater to Silver City, Santa Clara, Bayard, Hurley, and all of the little villages, you know, over that whole range. It's been studied by a hydrologist. The hydrologist report has been critiqued by a contractor in this flawed process, found nothing wrong with it. That's an $18 million project. Senator Domenici's $66 million could pay for that with lots of money left over. We need to find similar projects elsewhere throughout the four-county area. bring all the public drinking water systems in the four-county area up to snuff. They have infrastructure problems. They have leaky pipes. They need another well. They have one well and ought to have another one somewhere else. This money could be used for all of that. It also could be used to improve the existing irrigation diversions in the Cliff Gila Valley and on downstream. I mean, there are real benefits that could be achieved from the alternatives that have been put forward on the table, but which the process seems determined to defeat.
So how do you respond to people that say, we've got to get this water and we can't let it go to Arizona? I mean, is that really the right way to look at this issue?
Well, no, it's not, I understand why people think that, because the process has misled them, has given them misinformation, has confused them. People think of this 14,000 acre foot junior water right as if it were water. It's not water. There's not 14,000 acre feet per year flowing to Arizona today. And the expense of developing this junior water right to create a risky and unreliable water supply costs so much that I think the process should be determining whether or not this junior water right is worthless. I think it's worthless, myself.
So to really, you're saying that you can't do it. It's fatally flawed, so it's impossible to really get that full 14,000 acre feet of water. Is that right?
Well, again, I need to make the distinction between fatally flawed ways to do it and other ways that are just infeasible because they're so expensive nobody will
right,
pay for them.
Right.
But no, even if you could and even if you decided to pay for it and could build it, you would not get 14,000 acre feet. On average, you would get a fraction of that. And the cost that you would expend to do that and the risks that you would take are just overwhelming.
Right.
It's not stewardship to develop this water.
Right, right. So let's shift gears here to transparency issues. You alluded earlier in our discussion here this morning to the secret model. What do you mean by the secret model? What's going on?
Well, I'm not sure what's going on. I have never before seen a water planning process that kept the core information a secret from all of the stakeholders in the process. But that is exactly what this process is doing. The process has developed a spreadsheet. Now, the spreadsheet contains the actual amount of water in the Gila River on a daily basis from 1936 to 2013. The Arizona Water Settlement Act required the negotiation of a very complex agreement that codifies all of the restrictions on New Mexico's diversions in order to honor the senior water rights downstream. So all of these terms that are in this 100-page plus agreement are built into the spreadsheet. And when you run the spreadsheet, you get the amount of water that can be diverted from the river every day from October 1936 through March 2013. So it's a long period of record. And by the way, water is available for diversion under those terms only like 10% of the days. And in many years, no water is available for diversion. You have to have it already diverted and stored if they're going to have a water supply, and that storage can't evaporate or leak. So the spreadsheet model has been kept a secret. The process has shown little snippets of it in PowerPoint slides. That is one of the things that raised my suspicions when I first started looking at this last October. There was no definitive information. I asked for a copy of the secret model. It was refused. I submitted an Inspection of Public Records Act request, making a formal legal request for the model. It was refused on grounds that I don't think will stand and I intend to pursue. I appealed that refusal to the Interstate Stream Commission director. He refused me again. The ironic thing is I have that model, and I've run it, and the news is bad. So transparency would put all of these facts out in the open so that everybody could evaluate them. They would talk about reservoir evaporation and reservoir seepage. There would be a yield study. I mean, the process has expended several million dollars on studies and reports, yet nobody has done a report on the water that we would get out of it. That's the most single most important piece of information there is, but it's a secret. Well, it won't be a secret much longer. And people need to have that information so they can make their own educated, so they can have an educated opinion.
That's right. It seems like so much of the analyses that have been done are dependent upon these assumptions made on yield and when you're diverting water and when you're not diverting water. So it seems like if the model isn't right, it impacts the ecological studies. It's impacting how much water you can store and the whole yield question that relates to the economics and the financial feasibility of the project. So why do you think this fundamental question after all these years has not really, you know, been talked about in what, 10 plus years? It's not being discussed. Why is that?
Well, now you're asking me a question that I'm really not qualified to answer. I'm not a psychologist. So I don't know. I just find it bizarre and unprofessional that this information about a public resource to be developed with public funds is not publicly available.
Okay, we'll be right back with Earth Matters after this short break. Stay with us. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. This is Allison Civic of Gila Resources Information Project, and I'm your host for today's program. I'm joined here in the studio by Norm Gaum, former New Mexico Interstate Stream Commission Director from 1997 to 2002, and one of the foremost critics of the Gila River Diversion Project. And we were just talking about transparency and this secret model that the ISCs had available for over 10 years. And I'm just wondering, Norm, is this typical? I mean, isn't yield to me just seems like a pretty fundamental question. And, you know, and you've been involved in many of these large drinking water projects and planned for them, designed them. You know, how do you typically go about doing this kind of an analysis, and especially in terms in the area of yield?
Well, let me tell you briefly a couple of stories that I'm personally familiar with, and one would be on the Gila. The third attempt to develop this junior water right on the Gila River was planned by the Bureau of Reclamation. They spent millions of dollars.
I think it was, what, $6 million, I recollect.
I don't remember the number, but it was a long duration and millions of dollars in this failed planning effort. They published their model as an appendix in their report. It was there for everybody to see. I just reviewed it, you know, pages and pages and pages of modeling results right there in their report. Another example I can give you, I was responsible for planning Albuquerque's diversion from the Rio Grande of their federal project water that comes from Colorado and is stored in Heron Reservoir and flows down the Rio Grande. In order to do that, we needed to demonstrate to the citizens of Albuquerque that their groundwater supply was inadequate. Oh. The first step we took was to retain the U.S. Geological Survey, the federal government's scientific research organization. They built a computer model of the aquifer. It took 3 years, and that was published. They published the results, and then our planning used that as the basis. We also had the Bureau of Reclamation's published yield studies for this imported water project. So we knew we had, we credibly knew, on the basis of expert published work, that we had a groundwater supply problem and we had a solution. And then we went into an open public process with a Citizens Advisory Committee, got 100% consensus that this was the right thing to do, and the City Council approved the project and raised the rates to build it. Santa Fe had a similar story, but I never have seen any water project proposal that relied on secret information as its foundation. I mean, it's like building a house up in the air without a foundation under it.
Right, right. Which you wouldn't do, obviously.
Couldn't do.
Couldn't do. That's right. Well, so what, looking to the future, where are we headed? It's May. We've got a preliminary decision by the Interstate Stream Commission in August, a final decision November. We have to tell the Secretary of Interior what we're going to do by the end of the year. Notify, are we going to move the Secretary? Are we going to move forward with a New Mexico unit, a Gila River diversion, or not? So what does this process look like from your understanding between now and then? What are we going to see in the coming months?
Well, let's start with what the law requires. The Arizona Water Settlement Act of 2004 gave the New Mexico Interstate Stream Commission until the end of this year to decide whether or not they wanted to build a diversion project. And it's not a diversion project. It is to build the New Mexico unit of the Central Arizona Project, as strange as that may sound. So they have a deadline by the end of the year to notify the Secretary of the Interior. If they write that letter, which doesn't need to contain anything other than they want to move ahead, then the federal environmental law process will commence. And this will take many years and will cost many millions of dollars. And I can't help but believe that it will be a rational process, not based on secrets or work that hasn't been done, but it'll be rational and founded. And I think in the end, it will determine that the project is indeed fatally flawed or infeasible, but it will take huge amounts of time, money, and human effort to reach that conclusion. So that's one possible way that this could go. Another way it could go would be for the governor or the Interstate Stream Commission to demand that from now on the process be open and transparent, for them to say what they know and what they don't know about yield and cost and risk and water rates and all of those things. And they also should describe the good things that could accrue to the four-county area for improvements to their public water systems. And then they could make a rational, well-considered, and legitimate decision. If they continue on the way they're going right now, their decision will not be legitimate. It's just too flawed. So there's that basic choice, and it's up to the commission. And the commission, by the way, is all appointed by Governor Martinez. These are her handpicked appointees that are conducting this flawed process. Or the governor could make the change. The commission could make that change. They could bring this out in the open the way it needs to be done. Or they can ignore all the facts and all the criticism, and they can move ahead and be wasteful. We will see how that turns out.
So we are going to be seeing a number of studies here very shortly. We're going to have final reports, or I believe actually a draft report first from the Bureau of Reclamation here very shortly, with probably an opportunity for public comment. Is that right? You know a little bit more about the schedule than I do.
Yes, I'm very very interested in seeing the draft Bureau of Reclamation report. I met with the Phoenix area office staff in Phoenix on May 5th, And they told me that their report would be final by the end of July this year, that there would be a 30-day public comment period before they on a draft before they finalized it, which means we should have the draft. You know, it should be imminent. It ought to be coming out. Now, they were downplaying expectations. You know, they said it's appraisal level. I asked them numerous questions for which they have no answers. So we'll have to see what the report has in it. There will be other studies and reports coming out, not all of them sponsored by the Interstate Stream Commission. And I think there's going to be a lot of information. The question is, will the decision makers consider the facts, or are they going to go with their irrational concepts of this process?
Yeah, and I guess that's my question. I mean, we're going to be inundated with studies here in a matter of weeks. And how do we know how the Interstate Stream Commission, the commissioners themselves, how they're going to be considering this information? How typically is it when you were director? I mean, how did this work when you were director of the ISC?
Well, when I was a very different commission when I was director of the ISC. We had a very conservative chairman who happened to be an engineer, but he believed in full open discussion of everything that was controversial. I never once saw him refuse somebody's request to address the commission. Yet at the last commission meeting I attended, the chairman would not hear from somebody who wanted to speak. There would be a staff report that would evaluate fairly and objectively. All of these reports would put forward a range of alternatives for the commission's decision and would make a recommendation. And then that would be put on the table. It would be discussed in an open public meeting. And then at a later date, the commission would reconvene after they had given full consideration to everything, and they would vote as to how they would proceed. Now, we don't have any idea what this process is going to look like. But if it looks like the processes of the past, it will be perfunctory, there'll be little opportunity for comment, and there will not be any objective staff analysis.
Wow. Well, that doesn't sound very good in terms of process. I was going to ask you, is there any hope to improving this process in the last remaining months of the AWSA planning process leading up to this decision? I mean, is it conceivable at all that they could that the commissioners could sort of modify? I mean, there's between August and November, there's a 3-month period between a preliminary and a final decision. Presumably, they're going to be listening to a bunch of people. I mean, I'm assuming that. I don't know that. But do you think that they would do that? Or is it just wishful thinking at this point?
Allison, I wish I had a crystal ball and I could say that. It's certainly within their capability to do that. I am an optimist that with the facts on the table that are before them and with the controversy, that they will in fact reform their ways and create for the remainder of this process something that's fair and open and allows for public comment. And then they will make a considered decision. They will be receiving pressure. I believe the legislative interim committees are going to be looking closely at this. And one of the future possibilities, if the Interstate Stream Commission chooses not to reform their process and writes that letter to the Secretary of the Interior, you know, they only have the authority that's granted to them by the legislature. They could easily find themselves overridden by law, where they would have to retract that and we could get on with things that make sense.
Right. So with our last couple remaining minutes here in the show, what's the best possible outcome for New Mexico under the Arizona Water Settlements Act, in your opinion?
The best possible outcome is for the Interstate Stream Commission to be open and transparent in their decision-making process, for them to vote no, and then to immediately begin a meritorious process to determine the best use of that money that Senator Domenici got for these four counties to help improve their public water supplies.
And that is, usually we say there ain't no free lunch, right? But that's a case where $66 million is non-reimbursable. We get that no matter what, and we have an opportunity to put it to good use through, what, municipal conservation, effluent reuse, et cetera. Well, Norm, thank you so much for being with me today and giving us a very thorough understanding of the Gila River diversion proposal and its fatal flaws, and an alternative approach under the AWSA. I really appreciate your time.
My pleasure, Allison. Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks to our audio engineer, Kyle Johnson. And thank you for tuning in to this week's program. I'm Allison Civic, and I hope you'll join us again for next week's edition of Earth Matters here on Gila Members Community Radio 89.1 FM.